the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. I got a simple email on my computer the other day, and someone asked a question. And as is my way, I wanted time to think about that question, and so I took time, and I took more and more time, and the question kept coming back to me. And it came to me at different times during the past week or so. And it came back to me while I was in Atlanta at Father Jacob Meyer's funeral. And what had begun as a very simple question seemed to me to open out in a way that began to include a great deal of the pastoral and evangelical dilemma, and I'll use that word in an Orthodox sense, our dilemma as Orthodox as far as evangelizing those who have been evangelized before from the point of view of a non-Orthodox Christian faith, from the point of view of a Christian faith where we are able to take up our faith and go out and use it as a kind of a cause, and more become less self-aware than we have got to be if we are going to be Christians at all. How do we deal with that? One of my first lessons as a priest in my first parish was the degree to which I can be completely right and correct as far as teaching the content of the Orthodox faith, and if it is not done with love and out of love, it can be divisive, it can be harmful, it can just turn everything upside down. And so, if there's to be any talk on my part about how things ought to be done, St. Paul's point about good order, how ought things to be done? What is to be okay in church and what isn't to be okay in church? What is to be okay in the spiritual life of all of us together? Because every one of us has our spiritual life as part of the spiritual life of all of us together. None of us has a spiritual life in separation from the rest of us. So there are things that are not in good order there either. There are times when some of us, on the basis of commitments that we have that come from outside of the Orthodox Christian faith, may judge that things are not done according to the way we believe they ought to be done. And then all of a sudden we have a problem with disorder. And so one possible answer to that difficulty as we try to establish orthodoxy in America is to rely on rules. But Christians in America know all about rules. They're better at rules than anybody, because their Christian faith is based on a certain set of rules. Rules about what you can believe and what you can't believe. And of course, you have a complete array, you know, a choice from the red end of the spectrum to the ultraviolet blue end of the spectrum about what rules you would like to pick. There is even a church where you don't have any rules. You make up your own rules. There's a church for that. There's a church for everything. It all revolves around rules. So whenever anyone asks me a question that is designed to be answered with a rule, I always have difficulty. And it could be a very simple question. This was a very simple question, and it has a very simple answer. And it could be explained liturgically and theologically. When is it too late to come to communion? All of us have, many of us anyway, not all of us, but many of us, most of us maybe even, have challenges as far as getting here at the beginning of the Divine Liturgy. And when is the beginning of the Divine Liturgy? It's when the priest senses, basically, because the priest is sensing those who are gathered together in order to perform the liturgy. But as the liturgy progresses, the next time I sense, there are more people. And when it comes to time to come to the chalice, there are as many people as there are going to be. And they almost all come to communion. And then at the end of the liturgy, when I look out, the room is almost empty again. And so there's a kind of a high point. It's a curve. And it's interesting because it's exactly the same curve that the liturgy follows. The problem is that we're not all following the same curve. The high point is communion, that's for sure. But in order to have the part of the liturgy, the second part of the liturgy, where we receive communion, we have to have the first part of the liturgy, and that's the liturgy of the Word. So if we haven't participated in the liturgy of the Word, then we can't participate in the liturgy of the Eucharist, the receiving of communion. So the simple and direct answer to the question is, if you can't get here during the reading of the gospel, you ought not to come to the chalice because you haven't participated at all in the liturgy of the Word. It would be nice if we could all be here right at the beginning so that everyone could be sensed together, but that's not possible. I'm not saying that's the rule. The rule is that's the way it has to be. If that had been the rule in my household and my parents had been Orthodox, I would have been able to keep them from going to church or communion every week because I could never find my shoes as a child. I didn't like shoes or believe in them very much, and so it wasn't like I spent a lot of time knowing exactly where I put them the last time I took them off, and certainly not my Sunday shoes. They were probably thrown in a corner the end of Sunday the previous week. So I always had trouble finding my shoes. Now, I was one of six children, and none of them had much more concern with their shoes than I did. So I know what it's like. And we, Sharon and I, we had five children. I know what it's like to get here at liturgy at 10 o'clock at any particular time is just almost an insurmountable effort for a family with children. And some of us come from far away. It's interesting that some of us that come from not maybe the most extreme distance that any of us come, but some of us who come from further away sometimes beat me here, and I come and they're here already. But there are people who have more control over their time and are able to do that. So we can't just make a rule and say, you have got to be here by 10 o'clock to be sensed as a member of the group that has gathered to do the Divine Liturgy, because this is something that we do together. It would be different if we were a church that taught, and there is a church like this, you probably know what church it is, that it is the priest that does the Divine Liturgy, and the people come and they receive this special divine gift of communion from the priest and the church. And so there's the clergy and the priest and the bishops and the Pope of Rome, and then there's all the rest of us. And if we want to receive the sacrament of communion, we've got to go to church to get it. Now, is there any point in necessarily being there right at the beginning of the liturgy when it's, after all, the priest who's doing the liturgy? It's not us. So we can come in maybe at the last moment, receive communion, and take off. It's the place you have to go in order to receive the special stuff. But we can't treat the church like that as Orthodox. We do the Divine Liturgy together. A priest is not allowed to do Divine Liturgy all by themselves. We have to have the people. And so the people gather. The people who are going to receive the sacrament of communion gather and begin to move in an ascent. Not an ascent where there are just a few people at the beginning and everybody at communion and nobody, hardly any at the end, but almost that same curve. But it's a movement that we all do together. We all come together. I'm not saying everybody has to be here at the beginning. People come as they best, they make their absolute best effort, and they get here as soon as they can. It's already going on. We are already, those of us who began it together. And you come and you join in. And you participate. Of course, there is a cutoff point. You have to participate in the liturgy of the Word in order to participate in the Eucharistic liturgy. But it's not on the basis of this is the rule. It's on the basis of the fact that this is the reality. If we haven't done this, then how can we do that? We can't just rush in at the last moment, receive communion, and then leave early because we have other things to do. Where is the reality of our life if we do that? It's not here. There are great advantages, actually, to the Western, the Roman Catholic approach, where the church takes care of the holy stuff and everybody else is free to go about their business out in the world. They're all damned anyway. They can't change. They can't be transformed. Okay, God can save them by dying on the cross. And if they come and acknowledge him, then they'll get their hands stamped. And that's a good reason to come to communion and go back into the world. But that's not the Christian faith. They made that up fairly recently in the West. And we can't allow ourselves to practice like that because it doesn't reflect the reality. Rules are nice and crisp and effective at accomplishing things. And I could write a nice list of them. Sometimes I would like to. No coming to divine liturgy in shorts. It's a good rule. It's easier to say now in January. I wouldn't maybe be quite as bold saying it in July or August. But it is not appropriate to come to divine liturgy in shorts. To come into the presence of God himself, to enter his kingdom in the most casual clothing that we happen to have, it's not appropriate to wear shorts under a cassock. I've forbidden people, anyone, to come and serve in the altar in shorts under vestments. And that's as harsh as I've become. But the fact of the matter is, we shouldn't have shorts on if we're serving either in the altar or out of the altar. No leaning up against that door back there. See, it's a bad idea to ask me for rules because actually I'm pretty good at rules. My family is from Germany and they specialize in rules and discipline. So it's not a good thing to get started, and I have to remember forcibly, in love, you can be right and it will kill everybody and everything. So I do have to remind myself. Well, while we're on the point of rules, no leaning against the posts on either side of the doorway back there during the divine liturgy. As a disengaged observer, I have nothing to do with what's going on here. I just happen to be here and I'm just relaxing against this door. Father comes out, he blesses everybody he senses, and I just keep standing there like that. This is not how you stand in the presence of God. So there are a lot of things that we do that we ought not to do. We speak in this room as though we were in any other room. And, well, it's not during the divine liturgy. It's not when the divine liturgy is being performed. Well, what are we thinking? Is it like when you're in a movie theater? Or like when you're at a performance of some kind of a choir or orchestra? No noise while the performance is going on? I hope that's not what we're thinking. I heard somebody say not recently to the choir, "Break a leg. I almost fell over." This is not a theatrical performance. The choir is not there for entertainment. They ought not to let their emotions be built up with pride because they are doing the singing that they are doing. Now, almost every Sunday, we're very fortunate. We have a lot of good singers, and even if most of us are gone, the people who are here at choir, they can do a credible job. I've been in missions for a long, long time, and I've been in missions where that was not the case, and the liturgy was still the liturgy even so. But we have to remind ourselves that this is not some kind of a show. This is not some kind of a performance. It's something that we are all doing together. And of course, if we're going to do it together, we have to be here in order to be able to do it. And so we could give ourselves lots of rules. Don't do this, don't do that. But those rules, interestingly enough, it wouldn't be necessary to even talk about any of them if we were here doing what we are actually here to do. If the reality of our lives were that we come in this place to leave a life where we are the most important thing in our own lives behind, and we come to this holy place and we do this thing together through Christ that brings us into the actual presence of God so that we can receive his body and his blood together, all of us, not just coming in for some special something that comes from outside of this world, but it's possible, our faith is, to come together and have our humanity transformed by sharing our life with the humanity of Christ himself. the one who came to change what it means to be a human being. And we come to the divine liturgy in order to participate in his humanity, in order to share his humanity, in order to share his divinity, in order to receive his body and his blood of his humanity and divinity into ourselves. And it takes time to prepare ourselves to be able to do that. We have to come to confession. We have to come to, here's another good rule, incidentally, about coming to confession. Well, how often do I have to come to confession? The bishops answered that question. The Synod of Bishops, all of the canonical bishops, they got together. What are we going to say? We don't like rules. We don't want to reduce our faith to rules. Okay, here is a good rule. Once a month, who follows it? People want a rule. That rule's not good enough. We want another rule, a different rule, a more lax rule. People have come to like the rule that we come to confession 4 times a year, once during each of the 4 fasting seasons. Don't do it. Don't do it. We should come more often during the fasting seasons. More often, what does that mean? It means 2 things. First of all, you're already coming to confession sometimes, and you get to a fasting season, and now you come more often. Well, how often should you come during a fasting season? Bad idea to ask me for rules. Very bad idea. 3 times you should come. You should come at the beginning. You should come during the middle, and you should come near the end during a 40-day fasting season, Great Lent or Advent. And adjust that as far as the length of the fast of Saints Peter and Paul or the 2-week fast of the Dormition of the Theotokos. So for the rule gatherers, there's your rule, and that is a rule. It's not the monastic version of the rule that is so extreme that you realize, well, rules are not what it's about. It is a practical rule. We ought to come once a month. And anyone who comes less often than that has no business pointing out that somebody else is not doing what they ought to do with respect to the sacraments. That's important too. So rules are dangerous. But the important thing isn't the rules. The important thing is the reality of our participation. And that's the thing that we can't forget. We live in an American society that reduces religion to rules, reduces religion even to politics. I don't have time to get into that now, but it's a whole different thing. It's a terrible temptation for Orthodox in this country, especially those of us who are converts. And all of us here are converts, I think. Is there anyone here today who isn't a convert? I think every single one of us here today is a convert. We think in terms of the society around us when it comes to religion in general, and that includes Orthodoxy as well. And without even realizing it, we reduce religion to politics. The day before yesterday, Friday, was Sanctity of Life Sunday. And there was a March for Life in Washington. And Orthodox participated in it, led by their bishops, as we have now for many years. I have to say, President Reagan, when he instituted this day to remember the sanctity of life, was good enough with his Christian understanding and good enough as a public figure to use those words, sanctity of life, Sanctity of Life Sunday. Okay, what does that mean? It means it's not Right to Life Sunday. We have to be careful about having the things that are part of our faith made into politics alone. What would Right to Life Sunday be? Well, right to life. The unborn have rights. The unborn are already participants in our political religious life here in America. Is that orthodoxy? Is that what the unborn need to participate in? As citizens of the United States of America, before they are born, they already have inalienable rights, which according to the Constitution was given to them by God. Yeah, okay, they mentioned God, but their way of thinking about things doesn't have anything to do with the fullness of the Orthodox Christian faith. Believe me, they had their own way of thinking about those things, and it was essentially political. So conferring political rights on the unborn, and then we go and affirm it? No. We march for the sanctity of life. Life is sacred. Last October, there was a political freedom of the pulpit Sunday, which some Orthodox pastors acknowledge. I was outraged myself. On Ancient Faith Radio, a fellow was interviewed, a pastor of a megachurch, who put forward the idea that they and the Orthodox were on the same page when it comes to the marriage of gays. It sounds fine. Sounds good. Hey, we're against that. Politics is slippery. You have to watch for what in philosophy they used to call, for shorthand, the "do you still beat your wife" principle. Do you still beat your wife? The assumption, you beat your wife. Because the position that they were taking is that traditional biblical marriage is entrance into a contract of marriage between a man and a woman. That's biblical marriage. And Orthodox are for biblical stuff. Everybody knows that. And this pastor of this megachurch gave an example to the Orthodox priest who was interviewing him for Orthodox Radio of a case where the government was forcing some person to marry two people of the same sex because the law is that you have to let these people enter into a contract. Biblical marriage is entrance into a contract of marriage between a man and a woman. Orthodox should defend that, right? Why not? As far as we're concerned, marriage is not a contract. People have gotten married since the beginning of time in all kinds of different ways. In India, as Buddhists, as Hindus, as pagans, who knows what they considered marriage. Dragging people out of the cave, anything. Whatever they wanted, it was marriage, right? Some kind of socially recognized arrangement. The difference between all of that that's come before and an Orthodox understanding is that there is such a thing as bringing marriage into the church. Now, you can't bring a marriage between two men or two women into the church. There's no question about that. But we are not going to accept the idea that marriage is a contract and go out and fight shoulder to shoulder along with those whose understanding of Christianity is fundamentally political. It makes sense to Americans whose religion is political by nature. It doesn't make sense to us. And we need to call people on this. Instead of just going along and jumping on political bandwagons and abandoning our faith in the process. Politics is slippery. You need to understand the assumptions you're getting in bed with when you start to support political things. So there it is. I managed to keep quiet on that since October, and then it came up again with Right to Life Sunday. Right to life. Political rights for the unborn. That's the standard. Politics is reality. And if we change the law, we change reality. That's what people believe. All my students in all my classes, they all believe that. Whatever religious faith I believe in, that's real for me. That is a political understanding of the nature of reality. We need to not get sucked into it. And politics is the forum. It is the place where we do get sucked into it. So when we Orthodox go and we march in Washington, sanctity for life is what we are marching for, not some kind of a political position. We need to fight against having our faith politicized and reduced to political slogans or a political, worse yet, way of understanding the nature of reality. It's a great challenge for us as Orthodox in America. And with our background, all of us, the easiest thing for us to do is to just go along with whatever sounds Christian, according to that way of thinking, but that is a way of thinking that is outside of Orthodoxy. From the beginning, the Orthodox, well, Christians, in the Apostolic Canons, the oldest collection of canons that there is, when the church became legalized and got together, these canons were already there, and they included the teaching that to take the life of the unborn is to take a human life. There wasn't anything political about it. It was an affirmation of the reality of things. And that's where we always need to come down. As long as we do that, we can keep from getting confused between the kind of political religion that is rampant around us and the affirmation of reality that we have in our own faith. And that's how the questions have to be answered as far as rules are concerned. Yes, you can make a rule based on the reality, but the rule needs not to become the reality. That's the problem. That's the problem with answering with a rule. What do we want to have our communion, our participation in the life of Christ be? One of the interesting things about Father Jacob Myers and the way he passed is this. On the 13th of this month, Father Jacob served his last divine liturgy at his altar in his church, in the church of St. John the Wonder Worker. 3 days later, he had died. He didn't miss. He was never not there for the divine liturgy. Monday morning, after having served the liturgy, he was at work at his desk, calling Matt Nasrallah and letting Matt know that there was a nun visiting in the area and they needed to have accommodations, a place to stay. Matt told me the other afternoon that Father Jacob lived his life at a speed. Everything was faster, faster. He would constantly encouraging people to move faster, do things more quickly, more efficiently. And he lived his last exactly in that same way. And then suddenly, God chose him. It was God's choice that this was his time. He went to the hospital. The organs of his body began to shut down one after the other, and he was gone. Just like that. 3 days after he served the last divine liturgy, he gave his life for the sheep. That was his life. His life was the life of a pastor. What would it be like for us if our last communion was that we came into the divine liturgy after the reading of the gospel, during the sermon, after the sermon, received communion and left early, and then 3 days later we died? How would things be between us and the reality that is the fact that we are created in the image and likeness of God, and we are called to be Christ bearers in the world that he created, and that we cannot fulfill ourselves outside of him, and we can't somehow just use communion as though it were something that we want to have added to a life that basically is mine. It's my life. I don't have time to plan ahead and be there at the divine liturgy so that I can participate along with all of the others during the liturgy of the word. I don't have time so that I can receive communion as a member of the body instead of just someone flashing in from outside. And incidentally, when street people come in, they can wear shorts. They can wear whatever they want. You know, they don't know. But we know. We know to prepare. We know what we are preparing for. And so, when the time comes that the priest says, in the fear of God and with faith, draw near. Incidentally, the in love part was added later on. Not that it shouldn't be there. I use it myself. Wasn't sure at first, had to think about it. But a deacon recommended it to me. Said, well, it's, you know, doesn't contradict. No, but the original thing was, in the fear of God and faith, come near. Have we fear of God? Do we know that God is our life? Have we fled from the world to God because we know that even though he is fearful, he is the source of our life, and we need the life that he has inside of ourselves so that we can live our life and be ourselves? Is that our relationship to him, or is it an afterthought that we barely have time for? It has to do with the reality itself, not the rules. Too often, those who ask for rules are looking for some way to deal a little lightly with the reality. That's why I always hesitate. And so we have to question ourselves. As I've questioned myself, I don't get here to serve the divine liturgy as early as I should. I come too much in a rush. I'm going to try to do something about that. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen.